Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. February 24, 2021. Spiritual surprise. Question: do people cross the Muxum together, as a group, or singularly? Answer: in principle, the individual is very important. Therefore, in a group, everyone goes through the Muxum in their own way, and not all at the same time. But on the other hand, the crossing of the Muxum by at least one of the tens has a great impact on the others. Question: so, the Muxum is crossed one by one, but the simultaneous transition is not excluded? Answer: the fact is that the transition from the feeling of our world to the feeling of the upper world, the forces of bestowal, occurs gradually. This is not a pull or a breakthrough, but a gradual transition, during which many different foundations change in a person. And therefore, we can't say that someone has slipped in now, and another hasn't yet. Question: so this process takes many years? Answer: no, the action itself is quite intense. It doesn't last for many years. Question: is this a surprise for a person when something is suddenly revealed to him? Answer: yes. Any spiritual action that reveals itself in a new way in a person becomes a surprise for him. He feels that the world is filled with the quality of bestowal and love, the quality of the Creator, and feels a great attraction to this. Question: so the difference between someone who has crossed the Muxum and someone who has not, is that a person who has crossed the Muxum sees only positive forces working in the world? He sees everything rosy. Answer: it's not blink. Simply, there is one positive force in the world that operates in the quality of bestowal and love. Question: does he also see the manifestation of egoism in our world as positive? Answer: he sees this simply as a lack of understanding of the existence of a positive spiritual force. From Cab TV's Spiritual States, February 6, 2020. Muxum, transition from one quality to another. Question: the term Muxum in Hebrew means partition, barrier. What does Muxum mean from a spiritual point of view? Answer: Muxum is a transition from one quality to another, when a person changes his qualities from egoistic to altruistic, from the ability to work only for oneself to actions for the sake of others or for the sake of the Creator. In other words, his quality of giving prevails over the quality of receiving. Question: which of the Kabbalists first used this term? Answer: I first heard it from my teacher Rabash. And then this term comes up several times in our sources. Question: did Balhasulam write that this is the psychological boundary between the two worlds? Answer: this is not just psychology, but a sense of your attitude to the world, a change in human nature. Comment: it is difficult to understand how you can do an action without expecting some benefit for yourself. Even today, psychologists say that this is impossible. My response: indeed, it is impossible. But the fact is that the correct utilization of the forces of nature, when a person, in addition to the power of receiving, begins to awaken the quality of bestowal, gives him the opportunity to own both forces and use them together. Or, at first, he goes only to the force of bestowal, which is called the quality of bestowal or faith, emunah in Hebrew, and then he can act with receiving for the sake of bestowal. From Cab TV's Spiritual States, February 6, 2020. My new article on LinkedIn: the way the pandemic has strengthened religious beliefs. When one cannot come to terms with a somber reality, looking towards heaven is an instinctive reaction. In the US, 500,000 lives have been lost in the COVID-19 pandemic in a year since the outbreak of the virus. A recent survey by the Pew Research Center reveals that people from economically developed countries claim that the eruption of COVID-19 has boosted their religious beliefs, particularly in the US, where nearly 3 out of 10 American adults say the coronavirus plague has strengthened their faith. The coronavirus is a reaction to humanity on the part of the harmonious nature, a sort of catalyst for re-bridging the gap that has been created between humanity and nature. Therefore, what we urgently need are positive connections between us, in other words, the religion of love. The development of civilization has distanced us from nature, therefore, we are unaware of its conduct and feel more vulnerable to it. Thus, despite our tremendous technological capability, we stand helpless in the face of global epidemics, climate change, and other crises. We do not know where to flee, how to cope, and certainly do not see a bright future on the horizon. The uncertainty of these times, the lack of clear answers, and the fading of hope sends people searching, as they have since time immemorial, for a higher power they hope might be guiding their fate. They begin to grope in the dark and ask, where is this power that is creating this evil in the world that we see around us? Now, how can we survive the next blow, and in general, what is the meaning of this world? As we hear of more and more people dying from this plague, our sense of security is undermined, fear for our loved ones grows, and life takes on an unfamiliar, ambiguous gray tone. On the other hand, living conditions have drastically changed in the past year. Work has moved into home, children have become immersed in distance learning, and the framework of life has been reduced to within family boundaries. Our world has shrunk. With reduced choices in the search for some ray of light that provides security now when people really do not know what to count on or where to pin their hopes, religion becomes an anchor, a source of stability. One may not necessarily find in it an answer to every question, but at least it gives some sense of relief from the frightening reality people face. It is not a sign of a backward trend or a tendency to a more religious and conservative world. Instead, it is a sign of humanity seeking, in a time of turmoil and crumbling foundations, for the meaning of life, and a growing desire for a confident connection to the future in closeness with the supreme force that governs life. But in this quest, those who find religion insufficient for providing lasting calm and fulfillment will keep searching for answers. Even before the main religions expanded to the whole world, numerous beliefs, rituals, and idolatry practices existed. The human being has always needed a sense of security and answers for the inexplicable. This notion prompted the controversial Karl Marx to claim that religion is the opium of the people, while Voltaire said if God did not exist, it would be necessary to invent him. As a matter of fact, it is good for a person to seek a connection to a higher power. It manifests throughout our historical axis of development. Tribes danced around bonfires to honor their goddesses, bowed to statues, and worshipped the power of nature in different ways until such practices evolved into structured religions and systems of belief. The strengthening of religious belief in the recent days of the pandemic, as the latest survey shows, actually indicates a broader developmental process that humanity is going through. The global COVID-19 plague is teaching us that we are one small worldwide village, and we are all interdependent under a supreme force that controls every detail in reality. We are all in a single harmonious natural system, connected in all its parts, and a person, as a result of one's opposite egoistic nature, time and time again severs the threads of connection between himself and others, thus violating the laws of nature and tearing human society from the feeling of the supreme power surrounding us. The coronavirus is a reaction to humanity on the part of the harmonious nature, a sort of catalyst for re-bridging the gap that has been created between humanity and nature. Therefore, what we urgently need are positive connections between us, in other words, the religion of love. There is nothing wrong with the temporary tendency to return to the embrace of traditional religion, it contributes to our progress. Firstly, it connects people and hints to them about the good found in unity. Although in the meantime it is an egoistic connection, later it will be corrected to become altruistic. Secondly, religion reveals to believers their weakness in relation to integral nature and brings about dependence on the supreme force. Such a deep relationship does not conflict with any religious practice, custom, or tradition, but goes with them in one turn. Foremost Kabbalist Rabbi Yehuda Ashlag, Baal HaSulam, wrote in the writings of the last generation, apart from loving your neighbor as yourself, each nation may pursue its own religion and traditions, and one must not interfere with the other. Because when you love, there is a place for everyone, for each and every one. That is the biggest strength of every society. New Life 1297. An era of lack of direction and uncertainty.
Hello, and thanks for joining us on the New Life Show with Dr. Mike Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Yael. Hello. And today we'd like to talk to Dr. Lightman about connection as a means for achieving group goals. Around us, there are many different people and circles, which is a kind of a group. At home, we're a kind of a group. At work, we have different teams. We have friends that we do different things with. We live in groups. We're social creatures, and we'd like to understand how can we introduce the idea of connection in order for us to help us all achieve a better life. So we're on a course that we've been studying together for 2 or 3 months, and we learned that the world is becoming ever more interconnected, and that if we want to have a good life and if we want to succeed in life, then really the basis for success is to live in a more and more interconnected way, and a good attitude toward each other. This is what we've studied in the past few months. We learned how good it really is, and now we have a desire to become ambassadors of connection and to introduce this idea into our environment. We have our families, we're at work, we have teams at work, we have friends. We actually want to introduce this idea into our closer environment, into the group that we're a part of. Up until now, you taught us the right approach. Of course, I'm not a leader of any group or anything, but I'm a part of a group like any other person is. And you taught us that the approach should be very delicate, not coercive, but to understand the group, the people, what are its goals, and to introduce the connection as a means for achieving the goals of the group. And now we're coming to the stage where we want to explain it to others. How can we practically explain to the group or introduce into that group that I'm a part of at work or in my family those values of connection? How can I help that group become more connected? Just to mention that I took this course and I really want for it to happen. I understand how good it is. But my friends, my family, they didn't take the course. They have no idea. And this is where we start. So, first of all, what causes a person who's a part of the groups that I'm a part of in life to connect to a certain idea? They're searching in their life for something. They're searching for answers for the different questions of life. And what are the stages in this process of explanation so that I'll be able to bring my idea closer to them? Well, each of us always has questions and answers that are more or less successful, both the questions and also the answers. And this is how we live our life until maybe we grow tired of the questions and answers, and we see that the questions are useless because there are no clear answers to them that are sustainable. And therefore, it's how we live and flow with the currents of life, like yesterday and so on. However, here we really have a very unique method. that's very much adhered to our day-to-day life, very much related to it, and we see that without a method that really explains to us how can we get along in life, we won't be able to survive. Because in previous years, we didn't really need a method. We lived our life. I was born, I live, I go to kindergarten, then school maybe, to the university, to work, to the army, each in their own way, more or less, get married, have children, have to work in order to provide for the family. And that's how it was until we finished life with life. And came a new generation, the next generation, our sons, children, and grandchildren. And that's how we continue. We don't really have to know anything beyond the very narrow circle that's around us that allowed us to continue life. I knew that I have to study something, that I'll have a profession later, and I'll be able to live my life and provide myself for myself and pass it on to my children. But it doesn't happen in our time. We feel that something in our life went wrong, that it's not enough for us to know how to continue life because life is becoming very complicated, cumbersome, and that's where the problem is, because probably some new component entered our life, some new conditions that were really incapable of surviving this way. And I remember the life of our grandparents, of my grandparents, when I was about 5 or 6, 7. Life was very simple. My parents already had a more complicated life. They finished university, they went to study, they went to work. They wanted to advance all the time with their career and everything. When I was a child, I already prepared myself since childhood, where am I headed, what kind of profession will I get, where will I live. Even afterwards, there was a question about in what country and so on. Meaning, from one generation to the next, if I look at the past 3 generations, I see how every generation advanced essentially in their life and had to acquire in every generation that which was suitable for them in order to be able to survive and develop, evolve. And now that I'm a father or even a grandfather, I don't know what to do. I really don't know. What will I do? I don't even know what to offer to my children, my grandchildren. And that's the difference between the generations. And the world became so unpredictable that I don't know what to offer them. I know that my parents, they raised me, they directed me, they pushed me toward different forms of development, to develop in different ways, and I don't know what to do with my children because the world is such that we have no idea what's happening today or tomorrow or yesterday or in 5 or 10 years, so what to advise your children to do? And this is our problem. And not only our children, but also we ourselves. I'm not even mentioning people my age because I'm already retired. But suppose for my children that are 40, 45, 50, I can't know how will they live their life. In short, we're living in uncertainty. And this is what gives birth to different doubts in our life. Are we well off or not? Do we have an idea where we're developing or not? What should we do with life altogether? And so they have different courses, and there are different people that as if know how to help us define the meaning of life, the purpose of life. I don't really see anything good about them, or rational, or serious. But our generation is facing such questions that there are no answers for. And from what you've just described, suppose when I'm in my family or at work in some team, should I tell them these things? Should I talk to them about these things? Yes, everyone has to know about the inner state of the world, that it has no idea where to go, what to develop into. You can really see it on the behavior of the different leaders, that from one day to the next change their ways, having no idea what's the right way themselves, what is their path in life. Meaning humanity, as developed as it became, because it used to develop in a way where it was pretty clear to mankind where is it headed, what is it developing toward. But there came a certain point in our development where we came to a dead end and we don't know what to do. What you've described up until now, is it possible to define this as the first stage of my explanation to my surrounding? Yeah, this means that we've developed, with the help of natural processes that exist in every person, in every nation, in mankind altogether, and these processes, they have one name. Evolution. And then it's clear to us, what do we have to do, how do we do it, because it all follows our will to receive. According to which we behave and develop, and somehow, in a more or less successful way, but we've reached a certain kind of development. Everything we talked about up until now, I want to understand the process. Can we say that this is the first stage of my explanation to the people around me? Yeah, explain to them history, geography, and what's the sum total? The sum total is that we've exhausted the force of development that exists in us. I'd say that it's the desire to receive pleasure, the desire to develop our life in the practical, close, and general way for everyone, according to how it seems to us. And we see that more or less the entire world is going through the same process of development. Okay, this is the first stage in our explanation. What's the next stage? I don't know. Here we've as if exhausted our inner force to enjoy life, to want something, to discover continents, to, soar in the air, go into the ground, do different things, get rich. We did everything that we could. And to some extent, it brought us to a dead end. So what do we do next? We've exhausted the fuel that we had. After I told this to the people around me, whether it's a team at work or my family or friends that I do different things with, after I told them about all of this, first of all, why did I tell them all of this? Why is it important for them to know about it? Because all of us are starting to feel that there's nothing to advance to. We have no desire to develop. We don't have the fuel, the drive. We have no idea what's ahead. And this brings us to despair, helplessness. As a result, in the last generation, there are children, and if it's for me and my grandchildren, we start finding out that they don't want anything. They just want to, you know, live a very basic life. But they're not looking for any big achievements or anything. They don't want to be really rich or big scientists or something. They understand that all these things bear no fulfillment for a person. And therefore we see that you want to be a scientist, great, go ahead. You want to be rich, go and burn your life on that. But most of the teenagers and young people, they don't want it. What do they want? They want to live a good, nice, comfortable, convenient life, to play some game, to do something, and to go through life that way. So this is what I wrote down. The one thing is that we've reached a state where we're in a world of uncertainty, and this uncertainty brings us to different doubts and thoughts about life, contemplations. And the other thing is that many people have no inner fulfillment in life nowadays. Suppose I talked about these things with the people around me. What next? Why did I tell them about this? In order to scrutinize with them, is this the right state that we're in? Maybe not even us, if we're grown-ups, but maybe even our children, grandchildren. So, after this general example, I have to raise a question for discussion. Yeah, for us to understand that these questions that we talked about, the speech that I gave them, that it's accepted by them, and they agree in general with what's going on and what happens in our generation. And our generation is in such a state where we have no answers. They're turning to us. Suppose they used to turn to us, the older generation, and we can't give an answer. And therefore they don't turn to us because they feel that we have no answers. It's the first time in history and development that you don't turn to the elders because the elders have no answer. We've stopped advancing according to the process called evolution. Okay. Now, we have a lady that's studying with us on this course. She's a part of a six-person team. She's not the manager. They're all equals, a team of six people. And they're cooperating on a certain level. Also, there's some competition, a bit envy, you know, like in every team. Where you have people, you have different kinds of relationships. And she studied on this course, and she understands that the world is advancing toward integration and connection and so on. She understands many things already. And the first stage for her to introduce this to her team is to tell them about what we talked about just now. Suppose she can explain it in the best possible way. The next stage or phase is to find out together with them, what do they think about it? This is the next stage. This is what she has to do. Well, obviously, we have to find out what do they think. But what's next is that we have to reach some kind of common ground for us to know that we all agree with these facts, with the situation that our generation's in, and in this situation, what happens with the older people, with the grandparents, meaning with the mothers and fathers and the children, and even with the grandchildren. We have 4 degrees, 4 levels, and we have to understand where we all are, and accordingly for us to see all these things in life. Are we really helpless, that we have no direction, lack of understanding of how to advance toward what situation, state, and we've reached a state where all of us are in kind of shock from what life brought us to. And we have no idea how to fit in, how to manage, control, lead, be led, nothing. It's the first time in life that we have no idea what's going on with us. How do you scrutinize that with that team? I'm in a team with 5 other people. I gave them a starting speech. How do I find out, are they with me in the same position or what they think? Maybe there should be several talks. I don't know how many talks, depending on the kind of person in front of you, until they understand, what are you talking about? Where did you take all of these ideas from, these facts? Why are you so sure when you're looking at life, and so on and so forth? But after they all more or less agree with your point of view on life, then you can already advance, but not before that. How do I bring them to agree with me? Facts of life. Look at what's going on with the young generation, with the even younger generation, the grandchildren that are going to kindergarten and first grades in school, how they act and behave. They too actually don't look at us, the elders. They have something in their nature where they disagree with us to begin with. It's something that we don't have. We grab mom and dad by the hand and we follow them without questions. They don't. They have criticism and they don't want to be like us. I'm talking about children at the ages of 5, 10, 12, that already disagree with what we tell them. Because there's a connection between them, they're connected to the internet, they feel that instead of mom and dad, they have someone to guide them. It's the internet, all in all. And they don't believe anyone. It's always possible for them to go online and get whatever they need for life from their different discernments and so on. Okay, so this is how I summarize this stage. That development brought us to a state where today we're in kind of shock. We have no idea what to do from now on. What's the next stage in our explanation? The next stage in our explanation is determining that we are in an unknown state. It's the very first time where humanity has no idea, where people have no idea what are they headed toward, where are they headed, and they have no good example from which or that they can aspire for or attribute themselves to and follow them. You have no fascist, communist, capitalist, these, those that are successful in one way or another. There are some here and there, but these are in very narrow circles. And so we don't know what to do with ourselves. Therefore, the young generation doesn't want to invest a lot and studying, doesn't want to invest a lot in advancing in some profession or something. They just want to benefit somehow from life. Why enter to sit with their Coke and burger? And that's it. I did what I did in life. I'm sitting on the grass and the sun and everything's fine. Why was it important to me to explain to the people around me, to bring them to the conclusion that it's the first time that we have no idea where we're headed and what's the next stage? Because the clear future state that was always spread before mankind always gave mankind a kind of push, pull. It pulled children to study, parents to work, more and more. I see on my children that are already grown up and their parents themselves. I see that they really worked 15 hours a day in order to succeed, to make, to build themselves. I look at my grandchildren. They don't want that life. It's as though they've learned from their parents that it's useless. What am I living for? In order to be a donkey? And I think the even younger generation that's growing up now, that are now five, suppose, they're even smarter. And they have no inner drive to invest themselves in order to do different things in the world, to achieve some special status or something. Meaning, the force that brought to human development, the development of technology, economy, culture, education, that force ran out. So what now, Dr. Lightman? Probably we don't need it anymore. I don't see that as a result we came to something. Who's happy? Who's happy? I don't know. That's a question. What point would I like to bring the people in my group so that from there we'll be able to advance towards something? To a discussion of what does it mean to be happy? Dr. Lightman, look, our time is up. Just one more thing. It's clear to us that we're born and that we die. How can we be as happy as possible between these two points? This is what we should think about. Yeah, this is what you talk about. Dr. Lightman, we have many more questions, so probably we'll have many more shows. And in the meantime, all the best. Good luck. Thank you, Gael. Thank you for being with us. All the best.
My new article on LinkedIn is Nature Sentient. People who believe in God, the way religions relate to Him, attribute to Him feelings and thoughts, and communicate with Him the way we communicate with any powerful individual who determines our fate. We aim to please Him, and in return seek His favor. But what about nature? Is nature sentient? Should we please nature? And if we should, how can we do it? The wisdom of Kabbalah does not distinguish between nature and God. In the essay The Peace, the great 20th century Kabbalist Balhar Sulam explained that nature and God are synonymous, so when we speak of nature, we are actually speaking of God, and when we speak of God, we are actually referring to nature. This mechanism is evidently intelligent. Everything within it is intricately and wisely tied to everything else. And all parts of creation are moving in synchrony toward increasing merger. Just as ants or schools of fish think and act as one, guided by their synchronized intelligence, everything around us operates in congruence, everything but man. However, in the wisdom of Kabbalah, Nature is not a bookkeeper who checks our balance of good deeds or bad deeds and rewards or punishes us accordingly. Nature is a super intelligent mechanism that creates everything, conducts everything, and guides everything to its purpose of complete unity and harmony with all of reality. Nature continually develops creation toward greater complexity, from the atomic level through the mineral, vegetative, animate, and human levels. On the human level, we evolve the way all of nature is evolving. We first huddled in clans, which grew into villages, villages into towns, towns became countries, and today, when the entire world is one global village, people, animals, plants, and minerals are all part of one, interdependent system. We have become a single mechanism threaded and laced throughout the world. Moreover, this mechanism is evidently intelligent. Everything within it is intricately and wisely tied to everything else, and all parts of creation are moving in synchrony toward increasing merger. Just as ants or schools of fish think and act as one, guided by their synchronized intelligence, everything around us operates in congruence, everything but man. Humans are the only element in nature that has been denied the instinctive knowledge of right from wrong, and when to do what. But this, too, was done for a purpose. The only element missing in the perfect creation around us is the awareness of our life's purpose. Awareness cannot be pre-installed, it has to be acquired. This is why we are born devoid of any knowledge about our world. In fact, we are born so helpless that at first, we cannot even reach our mother's nipple for food, or defecate without making a mess of ourselves. No animal young is as helpless as a newborn baby. However, it is done on purpose, so we will learn everything from scratch, and at the end of the process reach the zenith of creation and become as intelligent as the system that has created us, common nature, or God. Since the nature of nature is harmony and merger, and since we must acquire the awareness of the goal when we are born, we are completely opposite from it, so we will learn every aspect of harmony and merger. The problem is that while we are opposite from nature, we are nothing but a menace, destroying everything around us, like senseless children. But as we learn to work in unison, as we become aware of the vitality of unity and solidarity to our understanding of creation, we also learn how to conduct ourselves more wisely, in line with nature's disposition, and the conflicts we feel among ourselves and with nature become tailwinds that push us forward. As long as we are obstinate, we suffer. We pollute the sky, the water, and the soil. We deplete the abundance that nature has given us. In order to achieve power and control, we use and abuse each other, kill, rape, and denigrate each other as though only we are entitled to enjoy life, and we leave nothing for the future. We behave like grown-up children, with bodies of grown-ups but the mind of a child. If we focus on connection, we will find the right track and clean up the mess we have created. If we keep demanding for ourselves and shun nature's disposition toward harmony and merger, our escalating conflict with nature will inflict on us worsening adversities. We may be smart, but we are very unwise. If we truly want to do good for us, we must first learn what we know, what we don't know, and how we can learn what we must do to help ourselves. If we listen to nature's intelligent mechanism, go along with its trajectory toward increasing cohesion, life will be much easier and simpler than the havoc we have wreaked upon ourselves. The secret code of the Torah. Comment: it is said that the first letters that appeared after rock paintings, pictographs, were the letters of the Hebrew alphabet, Aleph, Bet, and so on. My response: they did not appear. They were discovered by Adam, who lived almost 6,000 years ago. He discovered these letters because he began to understand the correlation between the quality of bestowal and the quality of reception and the connection between them. He saw that there are only 22 connections, and that through these connections between reception and bestowal, he could express all the qualities of the world. Therefore, he depicted them in the form of lines and dots. From that time, we have the alphabet. Question: What is the black dot in a Hebrew letter from which everything starts? Answer: it is something that is completely opposite to the quality of bestowal and goodness. Bestowal, love, and goodness are the positive qualities that flow from one object to another only for the benefit of the other, and they are called light. And the opposite of it is called a black dot. Question: does any letter start with this black dot? Answer: of course. Comment: and then we draw a horizontal line, and a vertical line. My response: yes, on the background of white light. On the background of the white sheet of paper. Question: when the whole letter is written, what does it mean? Answer: I depict to what extent negative qualities can become similar to the positive qualities. Question: do you mean that this black letter can become similar to the white sheet of paper, to the white light? Answer: yes. Question: and when I combine letters into a word? Answer: by this you just explain how you move from one quality of bestowal to the second one, and then to the third, fourth, and so on. Question: and when I write a sentence and completely fill this, for example, white light, this sheet of paper? Answer: by doing this, you lay out all your capabilities of bestowal against the background of the white light. After the Torah was written, which depicts absolutely all potential mutual qualities of bestowal and reception, there is no point in writing anything else. Everything is just all sorts of additions and commentaries to the Torah. Question: so, does the Torah describe all the desires and aspirations of man to become bestowing and loving? Answer: yes. Question: what if a person writes in English, Russian, German, Armenian, or any other language? Answer: the fact is that what is being written now, you cannot read correctly because the languages are constantly undergoing changes. If you take a modern Frenchman today and one who lived during the Crusades, they would not understand each other. The language has changed so much. Question: what about Hebrew? Answer: no. Hebrew has not changed. We read books that were written 2,000 or 3,000 years ago. Adam wrote his book The Angel Raziel 6,000 years ago, and we read it as if it were written today. It is not very clear, but we read it. We could talk to Adam just as we would to our contemporaries. There is no other nation that could meet their ancestor who lived thousands of years ago and understand him and speak with him in the same language. And the Jews could easily. Question: is it because the code did not change? Answer: yes. It cannot change because it is the interaction between the light and the darkness, the interaction between two forces. Question: when they say that there is a certain code embedded in the Torah, is it about this interaction between the light and the darkness? Answer: yes. Darkness is the letters and light is the background on which we write. The letters represent the equivalence of a person's quality to the quality of the Creator. When man comes to this equivalence, then there will be no difference between the letters and the light. All the letters will only express the quality of light. All the letters exist only to emphasize all the qualities of the light in those lines, in those images where it is absent. Question: is it true that horizontal and vertical lines represent different lights? Answer: yes, of course. There are many different signs, and there are many secrets in this, that is, things that we have not solved yet. Question: are there really unsolved secrets in the letters? Answer: of course. There is nothing but letters. The letter is a sign between us and the upper force. There is nothing else but these signs. Question: can we say that the light passes from above through a stencil called letter and is imprinted in a person? Answer: yes, that is also true. Question: you once told a story about a completely ordinary person living in Siberia who wrote you a letter in Hebrew in the highest, purest, poetic language. Answer: yes. I showed it to my teacher Abash. And he said that it was a Kabbalistic text written by a simple man because he had such spiritual enlightenment. Question: can we conclude from this that all the letters are within us, within each person in the world? Answer: yes. Later I met this man, and he did not understand or know anything. He came to Israel when he was released from Siberia after many years. There was nothing left in him from the state he had experienced then. It was given to him as such a brief flash because he was suffering so much. He wanted to exit himself, his body, with all his might. And this tension brought him to such a state that he was able to write in Hebrew. It just came out into the world through him. Question: but can we say that it was his prayer? Answer: of course. From CabTV's News with Dr. Michael Leitman, January 4, 2021. Michael Leitman, on Quora: why are brands important? Brands help coordinate people toward a certain purpose according to a certain direction, movement, teaching, methodology, theory or practice. They help describe and explain all of the latter. As social creatures, we have needs to communicate, teach, grow and bring other people together in certain directions. We can then progress toward various goals. We, as human beings, have always set ourselves goals, but they have been corporeal. In other words, the goals we have progressed toward have all been in the realm of our corporeal desires and fulfillments of food, sex, family, shelter, money, honor, control and knowledge. In our present era, the emptiness of living for corporeal goals alone surfaces more and more in our sensations, together with the emergence of the desire to discover life's meaning and purpose. Moreover, today, as the wisdom of Kabbalah reveals itself more and more to the world, we have the ability to understand the meaning of life, and to present it in clearer and more tangible ways. Likewise, progressing toward the meaning and purpose of life requires participation of those wishing to discover it via learning, connecting, brainstorming and sharing. We thus need various social institutions and organizations assembled according to different types of people and other parameters in order to help us progress toward life's meaning and purpose. I therefore think that humanity will have much to do in this direction, as it is an integral aspect of human development. Based on the show Kabbalah Express with Kabbalist Dr. Michael Leitman and Israel Samsonikoff on January 12, 2021. Written, edited by students of Kabbalist Dr. Michael Leitman. Baal HaSulam's mission. And it came to pass in the days of the war, the days of the dreadful carnage, that I was praying, crying bitterly all through the night. And behold, at the break of dawn, it seemed as though all the people in the world have gathered in a group before my mind's eye. And a man was hovering among them with his sword over their heads, lashing at their heads. The heads soared upward, and their corpses fell to a great basin and became a sea of bones. Baal HaSulam, the prophecy from the point of view of Kabbalah: we are talking about very large, serious processes in the souls. These are not heads or bodies, not our earthly minds or our qualities. If we speak purely allegorically, then people, as if, are deprived of their minds. Only their bodies remain with them, which fall to the lowest level, the level of our world. They are deprived of the opportunity to rise spiritually, and thus they become spiritually dead. By war we mean the war of the forces of good and evil, between which man is confined. In this war, everything depends on which way the action is going, what the scales are leaning toward. And a voice called out to me, "I am the Lord, God, who governs the world with great mercy. Reach out your hand and take the sword, for now I have given you power and might. I will make you a great sage, and all the sages of the land shall be blessed in you, for I have chosen you for a righteous sage in all this generation, to heal the human suffering with lasting salvation." Baal HaSulam reveals his mission. The Creator, instead of sending an angel to take off heads, gives him a double-edged sword, so that by the force of this sword, only by reasonable, correct force, he can bring people another idea, correction, to give them, as it were, a different head and to restore their life, to make their striving forward different, that is, to guide them on the path of correction with the help of the same sword. The sword symbolizes the upper light. It can be both the poison of death and the elixir of life. This is what Balhasulam felt, and he began to seriously implement this prophecy. From Cab TV's The Power of the Book of Zohar number 5. A true gift of fate. Question: I would like to know if everything that happens to me, all this nonsense, is this my fate? I was fired from my job, scandals at home, my health is worse and worse. I am told, fate. I don't want such a fate. I want to know how to get out of this circle. Answer: you must stop. Stop and think how to live nonetheless. And what to live for, which is the most important thing. And then you will be in a state when you can reveal the deeper meaning of life. So, you actually are in a very good period in your life, a revelation. A revelation of the next level of understanding, awareness of nature and yourself in it. Only do not close your eyes and do not try to run away from all of this. Continue to exist on the same level as you are now, like in an automatic mode, on autopilot, and at the same time dig deeper. From where, why, and how do all these commands manage me and people around me? Why is all this happening? And what does the commander of all this want from me? And let everything else spin automatically. I am ready to agree with all this. Just like a machine. I think that it will quickly bring a person to the connection with the true manager of his life. From Cab TV's News with Dr. Michael Leitman, January 7, 2021. Cleave to the teacher. Question: can we cling to our friends when we work in the tens so much that we become infected with a reverent attitude toward the teacher from them? Or is it impossible? Answer: it is possible. We can help each other on our spiritual path and move forward calmly. If a person who is in a descent bows before the group, then the group will show him how to start listening to the teacher. And then this student can receive the same thing as the rest. Question: that is, it does not matter what you are, as wise as you can be or if with a sensitive heart. If you are in the right mood, can you receive absolutely all conditions and stick to the teacher? Answer: yes. Mental development does not matter here. Question: suppose a person knows that he does not yet have any inner development, that he is lazy. But he really wants to achieve. Can he cling to the teacher with this desire and get everything? Answer: only through the group. The group is the connector to the teacher and through the teacher with the creator. There are no other ways. Question: this means that a person places himself in a group, and the group helps him hear the teacher, cleave to him, and go to the creator. It doesn't matter who, what, and where you are now, even if you are a hermit. If you want to, you can. Answer: we all came from one system, the ten, from a soul that was broken into many parts. Therefore, gathering in such tens, we again reveal the creator and unite with him. From Cab TV's Teacher, Student, February 7, 2019. Act according to nature's formula. Comment: in Kabbalistic sources, it is written that without the revelation of the Creator, we cannot be equal. My response: we will not be able to do this because we need a common denominator we doing this for. The good of society cannot interest us. Our egoism is beyond that. Equality is possible only if we unite in our upper root, from which we come. Then, as we reach it, we will understand why we are different. Precisely this difference in the integral sum gives us the feeling of equality. Comment: throughout the history of mankind, we have existed in a society where there has been no equality. Even today, the struggle for equal opportunities continues. Women try to become like men and vice versa. You, as a Kabbalist, say that there can be no equality and humanity itself will never come to it. My response, we do not need to strive for mechanical equality. We must act according to the formula of nature, and then we will become equal. Even though we are different, we will be equal. From CAB TV's Spiritual States, April 29, 2019. The difference between the desires of Egyptians and the mixed multitude. Question: what is the difference between the desires of the Egyptians and the mixed multitude, Erev Rav? Answer: Egyptians perform actions because they were taught so, and the Erev Rav do it ideologically. They say, this is exactly what you need to do. Perform only the action, and the intention will be in it. The Kabbalist differs from them in that he believes, first you have to think about the intention. If, for the sake of it, it is necessary to do some auxiliary actions, perform them, but with intention. Because only in the intention do we have a connection with the Creator. You can even receive something, but if you have an intention for the sake of bestowal, it will be bestowal. That is, intention determines everything. The Erev Rav says, everything determines the action. Kabbalah says, everything determines the intention. But the people, Egyptians, do not care about either one or the other. They do not analyze at all what intention is. There is action, they have been taught this, and so they do. From CAB TV's Spiritual States, April 22, 2019. Sacrifice yourself to achieve the goal. Question: what is the most valuable thing in a student? Answer: to sacrifice himself to achieve the goal. That is all. Comment: it is interesting that the word sacrifice in Russian is always shocking, but in Hebrew it is so natural because Arava comes from the word approach, proximity. Sacrificing yourself is actually the law of love. My response: of course. Love is built on the sacrifice of one's selfishness. Question: and what does the teacher sacrifice for such a connection? Answer: the teacher is initially at a level where he does not have to sacrifice anything. Everything that happens between him and the students is beyond sacrifice. That is, a teacher who has risen to a certain level is primary. And then there are students who can get help from him. From CAB TV's Teacher, Student, February 7, 2019.